All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Thursday, March 15th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
Uncle James.
And we are from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com or DFSR.com for short, here to get you started or keep winning on FanDuel and DraftKings. Head on over to the site, DFSR.com/NBA. We'll get you a free 3-day trial of our projection system powered by our good friends over at Lineup Lab. Free for three, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings, free for 3 days, and then just $34.95 a month. I'm only going to get there. $34.95 a month after that. Man, I really blew this, but I'm not going to start recording again because as professionals, we soldier on. We'll pretend we're doing it live. DFSR.com/NBA will get you started. If I haven't given you enough inspiration and goodwill to go over and do it now, hopefully the rest of the podcast will set you straight.
You can trust us, dude. We're attention to detail people, as you can see.
So I mean, clearly.
Just trust the projections. They'll be great.
Well, I was actually just in my mind because I was like, as I was saying that, I was clicking around. Tried to just get another window open, and I was like, oh, my brain's so turned on to this like open read that I'm just gonna do this thing flawlessly even when I'm completely checked out of it. And then I was able to ironically not be able to get through it. All right, kind of a bigger Thursday in the NBA in terms of just overall games. Usually typical Thursdays only have three or four games, with two of them being national TV, but that's not the case tonight. We have 9 games, which I found interesting. One, because they just never do this. Two, it's actually up against the NCAA tournament. So I don't know if that was done purposefully or it was just kind of like a scheduling thing, because today is the first day.
And by the way, before it gets started, I just need to throw this out there. FantasyFactor.com has a great March Madness bracket contest that you can go check out. If you head on over to FantasyFactor.com, you can still sign up.
All right, good for you, or good for us. If you want to add on, it's a little bit of your sweat for NCAA stuff. So go check that out. And if you're filling out brackets, good luck. Since the NBA, we got turned on to just kind of daily fantasy NBA. My college allegiances have sort of taken a backseat. I'll try to throw it on in the background today. I would say today, though, for the NBA, for 9 games, it's a very weird schedule. We have a couple games with double digit or more totals, or you can't have more than double digits, you know, 10 or more betting lines.
Triple digit totals.
Then we have two games that I would suggest nobody watch at all, just for really any reason, because the teams are terrible. And then there's a couple other games that sort of fall in the middle. So we'll kind of break down what we see as some of the value creeping up here on a day that could get interesting. And then we're going to have to maybe really work around a minefield of just what we do with some of these different teams. As you know, like when you look through the minutes audit on what certain teams are doing, this has become a theme, and it will be a theme until we hit the playoffs, is that trying to figure out what some of the worst teams in the league are doing on a night-to-night basis in terms of their minutes. And it doesn't matter if the guys are starting or not sometimes. These guys can just not play kind of out of nowhere. So we'll kind of go through that. The first game is Toronto and the Pacers. Toronto's a -4 favorite. They had a scare against the Nets the other day. I felt like one of my better calls in the chat when the game started and the Nets jumped out to, like, I don't know, a 10-point lead, and someone was complaining that – well, not complaining, just mentioning that, you know, Toronto – you know, they play down to worse teams, and I was like, oh, they're going to win this game by double digits. And sure enough, they just kind of turned it back around and beat the Nets. Now, tonight they're going to looks like they're going to be without Anunoby and without Norman Powell. Norman Powell had been starting, left the game early against the Nets in the second half, and Fred VanVleet came in for him. So my question, I think, for Toronto here tonight is, one, it doesn't look like we're too worried about a blowout. Toronto's played in an inordinate amount of blowouts this year. They're only a -4 favorite. And then, so are we going to be able to trust the starters' minutes? And then who do you think grabs Norman Powell's minutes? Do you think we see a VanVleet start? Do you think CJ Miles maybe? What do we do here with Toronto? And then we can talk about the Pacers going the other way.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. I mean, we saw Fred VanVleet take the minutes last time. I would guess, and with a gun to my head, CJ Miles feels like a better replacement for Norman Powell in terms of like who will get named into the starting lineup. But it's still very early. We don't even know if Norman Powell is going to confirm to miss this game yet. Although, like you said, signs do point to that. It's going to be one of those things that we should know leading up to lineup lock. So there's probably not too much reason to speculate on it right now. We also saw DeLon Wright come back. Last two games, played 19 and 16 minutes. There's a possibility that he sees increased usage as well. So between all those guys, it could just be one of those situations where the Raptors just split up all the minutes, because it's not really like Norman Powell. I mean, yeah, he's filled in and played some minutes in the past, but it's not like he leaves this big gaping hole that they're going to fill with a guy necessarily. Powell only played 21 minutes against New York as well. So Yeah, so I think that's my take right now. Wait and see who the starter is and kind of proceed from there.
What about playing guys like Lowry and DeRozan? I mean, if we're trying to focus, if there's, you know, one, they're starting to get short on guys. Two, these are clearly the guys who are whose minutes are the safest amongst the bunch. Can you see rostering guys like this? I mean, Lowry had been cheap on DraftKings. Came off a pretty nice night against the Nets, so that price is it's only 7,700. I take that back. Do you trust the minutes? We have him at like 33 right now. Can you see him playing more in this situation? Do you think Toronto doesn't need to have their foot on the gas as much? What do you think about the big two, I guess, for the Raptors?
Yeah, Toronto was a really tricky team to project last night when I was doing the minutes because, so Lowry, I went off the Brooklyn and the Houston games, both of which were, you know, fairly respectable game scripts, where he played 32 and 33 minutes. But then you go back to the Detroit game, it was 41 minutes. Earlier this season, on lock, DeRozan and Lowry were playing 37, 38 minutes in close games. It seems like as we get later in the season, the Raptors, understanding that their position is pretty comfortable in the East, are being a little bit more tentative with minutes on guys like Lowry and DeRozan. That being said, I still think Lowry's totally playable on FanDuel at 7,300, very, very cheap price. DeRozan, I'm a little bit more skeptical of simply because it's kind of just been a while since he's been good on this price point. Like, you know, it's he's peaked up to it from time to time. The Washington game obviously had a big game against Detroit, but he was out there for 43 minutes. Like, I don't know that he's just a true talent $7,800 player when the rest of the team is healthy, and he's only playing 32 to 34 minutes a game. So both in consideration for me, but I don't know. Like DeRozan in particular, the variation around the minutes seems too great for me to be comfortable on a nine-game slate.
Yeah, worth noting on the Raptors is that while it's not set, they've all but locked up first place in the East. They're 4.5 games up on the Celtics, who have a lot of problems right now with just injuries. So you have to feel like the Raptors probably are pretty confident that they're just going to walk into the East playoffs and just know that they have home court advantage throughout. And I think that, you know, as you said, as the teams just get smarter about the minutes and knowing that their fate is sealed in a good way, I think we do probably not see outsized minutes for any of these guys, because what's the point? I don't think they're worried about winning a lot of these games. Now, interestingly enough, the Pacers going the other way are playing for something here, in the sense that they're actually third in the East, which I did not realize. They leaped over the Cavs, and they're tied with them in the loss column. So I guess they're definitely playing for at least a first round home series. But do you find that the Raptors' defense is too strong, or is it that, like, you know, can we start downward guiding some of the Raptors' defensive minutes, because they might just be playing longer rotations now and not as worried about it? This is a very tricky time of the NBA season as we try to learn, you know, because it's not just one team's minutes. It's like, you know, the Raptors aren't maybe necessarily fielding the exact same team that they've fielded all season long. What do you think about the Pacers here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Raptors are still fielding most of the guys for most of the minutes. Like, I think if you shave off, you know, 2 or 3 minutes of DeRozan, 2 or 3 minutes of Lowry, you know, drive Ibaka down just a little bit, like, it's not like you're not playing those guys altogether, or like a Spurs situation where the guys simply don't take the court. I think if you're looking at 5 to 10% fewer minutes for their starters, you know, that's really not that big an adjustment. And in some cases, like, you know, like Valanciunas, taking him out for more time could mean better defense, you know? So I'm not exactly sure it's a one-to-one correlation there. I think on a big slate like this, leaning away from a team like Indiana is probably prudent. It's not like Indiana has a ton of value that's jumping off the page anyway. Like, it's not like, you know, Oladipo is especially aggressively priced for us to want to consider him for cash. He's kind of like, again, barely scraping value. Why play him in what on paper is a pretty bad matchup? The point guard situation is like sort of strange now with Joseph and Collison both vying for minutes. I just think kind of up and down this team. Bogdanovich has been playing fewer minutes on and off recently too. I just don't see a lot of clear-cut value coming from Indiana, and I'll probably just skip them altogether.
And you mentioned Valanciunas. I want to make a note about him, because he completely crushed the Nets the other night, like 46 fantasy points. It was still only in 26 minutes. So, and his price, like, up to 7,500 on FanDuel. He's just not going to play more than that. Like, they don't want to play more than that anyway. And that was just the very best situation, where the Nets were starting like Dante Cunningham at center. So you could kind of see it coming with Valanciunas that night, that he was going to be. He was going to make the most of every single one of his minutes, but those minutes just aren't going to materialize. So people like to look at recent game logs, and he's been very, very good, and we are probably buying at a season-high price would be my guess, because the minutes just really aren't sustainable. 7:30 game, Sixers go in and play the Knicks. Sixers, a 9-point favorite as they still work their way into the play. They're basically set for the East in terms of the playoffs. Though I guess they are still one of these teams that's jockeying for the possibility of playing a home court first round. Though it's not looking so good in that respect. 9-point favorite here. You know, as the guys we're always worried about or most concerned with are Embiid in terms of his minutes and if they're going to be there on a night-to-night basis. They have gotten a little deeper at the wings, adding Ilyasova and Bellinelli. I don't know what you think about that and how that maybe eats in to guys like Redick or Covington. It's a good matchup here against the Knicks. They're a little bit of a blow at risk, and then we can talk about the Knicks. But what do you think about the Sixers here in terms of viable roster guys on a somewhat larger slate?
Yeah, it's kind of weird with Embiid. I think he's one of the main guys I was looking here, and there's one other guy that I'll get to in a second. I put Embiid at 33 minutes. That's definitely on the slightly aggressive side. I think as I'm just thinking more about what Philly's been up to recently in general, probably more like 31 or 32 is better, even though he did, if you round, play 33 minutes against Indiana. I think against a Knicks team, it's probably a little bit more likely that they'll be out in front of them, and you know, Embiid is the first guy whose minutes are on the chopping block. Like, I think Philly likes to kind of dance on that line and play with fire a little bit and say like, hey, if we can save Joel 5 minutes here or 3 minutes there, that'll add up to something towards the end of the season. Who knows if that's actually true, by the way, but I do think that's their approach. But it's also on the same token, like he'll be going up against Enes Kanter, who's just been one of the worst defensive centers in the league since he joined it, basically. You know, Kanter has obviously great offensive chops. He's an excellent rebounder. But the reason, whenever people look and they're like, the Knicks are stupid, why don't they play Enes Kanter more minutes? This guy gets a double-double in 22 minutes. It's because he can't defend the ball. And Joel Embiid is not the guy who you want to put Kanter out there against. So, you know, with them splitting minutes between O'Quinn and Kanter, I still could see Embiid just completely eviscerating them in 30 minutes as well. But I do feel like there's pretty significant minutes risk there. And at 10,000, again, I'm just not sure that's going to be the exact spot where you wind up wanting to land, given some other options in a similar price range that you have tonight. And then the other guy I wanted your thoughts on was Robert Covington. So Covington, his minutes were hovering right around 30, and he's been paying the $6,000 price tag as it is, jumps up to 37 minutes versus Indiana, and you know, is kind of just contributing across the board. The great defensive stats we're used to, chipping in rebounds, points, etc. So what do you think about Covington at 6,000? Because I could see him, like, our system has just always had a love affair with this guy.
Oh yeah.
And we've been right maybe as often as not, but I just don't know if tonight's the night.
I think that that's an outlier game. The 38 minutes, I do not think that that's going to be the norm for him. I think that the 10 rebounds, like, strikes me as something that's just not ever really going to happen for him in a given game, sure. just the way that they kind of roll out their rotations. So I would think that that game, and I'm with you that, like, Covington and this guy is day ending in Y. When he's like 5,500 and he's on a slate that our system has been wanting to jam him in all the time, because he's one of these guys, he's like without looking right away, my guess is he's a high variance guy because he needs to hit threes and he needs to, like, get steals. Like, those are the two things that are where he can really kind of pile on the numbers. If you look at, you know, the previous, funny actually too, because this huge game against Indiana, he had no steals. So that overall assessment would look wrong, except that the games before were 1, 4, 2, and 2, which is a lot of steals, especially on FanDuel where they're worth so much. So my thing with Rhett Covington is, I would say, I think the minutes are more like in that 30 range, and mostly because of those guys I mentioned, like bringing in Bellinelli, bringing in Ilyasova, just does. And while neither one of them is like a strict one-to-one comp for Covington, they are just kind of these longer wing guys that the Philly brought in specifically, I think, to just spell and just getting some second units. So I think overall the minutes and the rebounds are crazy on Covington, and he's really not a guy that I want to play, I don't think. Now the Knicks, I mean, they're just a complete and total mess. Do you trust? Okay, we talked about this very briefly off air. But it's very difficult. It seems very difficult to trust the Knicks' minutes at all, except for Tim Hardaway. Like, do you think that the fact that they paid Hardaway all that money in the offseason, and, I mean, mostly just that, again, he's like kind of like the last guy standing in terms of, like, this guys that they made, you know, sound decisions, but that's not correct. They made a decision on in the offseason. The fact that they paid him all that money, do you think that's the reason he's playing? No one else's minutes are anywhere close to anything you want to really consider, maybe Beasley off the bench. And then you have Hardaway playing like 38, 39 minutes a game. Do you think it's because of the contract? And do you think we can be aggressive with his minutes? Because that seemed, we have a kind of a track record of them doing this now.
Yeah, I don't really know what the plan is with Hardaway, particularly because he's dealt with some injury stuff this season. So, like, what's the point of running him out there when you're going to be quote unquote resting everybody else? I'm honestly not sure what the plan is. Yeah, like everyone else's minutes are coming and going. Beasley's minutes have been trending up off the bench again recently, but Hardaway's sitting there at 37, 38 minutes. I'm just not sure. I feel like it could go back down to 28 minutes at any time. I feel like blowouts probably should matter for a guy who you made a big investment in and seems to be a little bit fragile, but hey, what do I know? I do know that Hardaway was limited in practice on Wednesday. It's considered right now a game time decision with the ankle. But again, with a relatively early game, we should have news. I think that's enough for me to move the needle away from wanting to have any investment in him for my DFS purposes.
They did bring Courtney Lee in to start the other day, or back in to start over Nick Delina. He had been starting and playing some minutes, was coming very cheap on DraftKings, but then they just brought Courtney Lee back in to play his 15 minutes, so have at it. And then these other guys, Cantor, GPP side, play every once in a while, but that's really all you're going to get, because you can't really trust any minutes on Cantor just because he'll just play 20 out of nowhere. Charlotte, I was mentioning games that I have no interest in watching at all, and neither should you. I'd be hard-pressed to ever watch an NCAA basketball game at this point, because that product, I don't want to hear from anybody, that product is so much worse than the NBA that it's just not even in in the same play. I had arguments all.
Well, hold on, dude. About how hard they try compared to these NBA guys?
Go watch your kid's soccer game then. Those kids try hard too. The try hard thing makes.
It's the fans though, but think about the fans. These guys are bleeding Tar Heel blue. They are
awesome.
The students are there. They're jumping up and down. You're going to sit there and watch a game where corporate executives bring their mistresses, Doug? You have no soul, dude.
Well, here's the only thing. If you're going to say that you like watching NCAA basketball more than NBA, that is totally fine. You just can't use the basketball reason for it. Like, you can't use what's happening on the court as the reason. If you want to use...
Better teamwork, though.
That's all. Okay. All right. So we're going to move off this. But I do want to... Because I can spend...
I honestly think Kansas could probably beat the Knicks.
Okay. All right. So anyway, we're going...
Please. All right. Turn off my stupid college fan mode, because obviously I totally agree. College is borderline unwatchable. It's not even remotely on the same plane as the worst player in the NBA.
If you're excited for the upsets and you're excited for the fans and you're excited for the energy, then I totally get that. But if you're going to make a basketball argument for why the NCAA is better, then you just have never watched basketball, and I'm sorry. And you can at me on Twitter, or you can jump into the comments. It's just the thing that I spend every year now, spend the next 2 weeks just making this argument to everyone that doesn't know. And my father-in-law will be over for dinner tonight, and I'm sure we'll have the same exact conversation. Anyway, Charlotte goes in and plays Atlanta. Charlotte, 4.5-point favorites. We had talked about them as a team sort of stuck in that limbo of not bad enough to tank, not good enough to make the playoffs, but that kind of had made them a team that maybe we could sort of trust from a DFS perspective. We talked about this when they went and played the Pelicans. Have a good matchup here against the Hawks as well. Guys like Kemba, Batum was really good last game. Dwight, you can see Dwight really feasting on the inside. Revenge game, one of the many teams he's allowed to have a revenge game against. So if we're going to use the stupid revenge game narrative. What do we think about these two teams? Hawks seem a little bit worse, or a lot of it worse, in terms of the safety and stability. But let's start with the Hornets. Kemba's a guy. That's another guy that our system really wants to pull out. These high variance scoring guys usually seem to be, their prices are a little bit lower, but you need to get there on the baskets. And Walker fits that bill really almost completely. Can you see rostering him or any of the other Hornets?
Well, it was really sad for me last night, because as I was giving Kemba Walker his minutes and I was looking at the last couple games and looking at what seems to be the plan for Charlotte, in my head I was like, this guy's going to show up in lineups if I give him this many minutes, and chatters are going to complain, and Doug is going to have to field it. And I don't know what else to do, though, because I do kind of feel like we gave him the right amount of minutes. And, you know, Atlanta is just a pretty good matchup. Like, I don't know what else to say about it. Yeah, he's 8,300. I guess the points per dollar over the course of the season really haven't been there on this, given that he's averaged 37 fantasy points. But I think if you can project him for 37 or 38 minutes, it's probably the right number. And I don't know what else to say about it, frankly. I wouldn't be excited to see his name in lineups. I think if it were close, like I'm seeing he's in lineup one, I can go down a few lineups and get him out of there, then I guess I would want to do that. But it's just a tricky situation with him. I don't know. Lineups from top to bottom right now are looking a little bit shaky with Walker at the top of them. So
DFSR.com/NBA goes get that free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by friends at Line of Lab. The point guard situation just in FanDuel specifically is pretty rough. There really just aren't that many options that you can go for. I really don't mind Walker. He's not a guy you want to roster and then watch the game. Like, you're going to be upset because he spends a lot of time off the ball and he needs to get threes and he just has to score. And if the first couple threes don't drop, you're really feeling pretty bad about it. But I don't mind him. You didn't put me in a bad spot. What about guys like Howard or Batum though? Like, Batum has been a guy that's been sort of up or down.
Been playing a ton of minutes recently. The reason I would just ignore Batum personally is he's had two really good games in the last two games, like out of this world games, playing a ton of minutes as well. But the smell test, so we talked about Walker, he's 8,300, averaging 37 fantasy points a game. That's like the range where you can say, okay, yeah, it's a little bit of an increased opportunity situation. With the additional minutes, you know, there were these blowout things, so the minutes don't really represent what the plan is going forward. With Batum, he's 7,800, he's averaging 29 fantasy points a game. So I think with Batum, you have to tell yourself a totally different story, which is that this guy is in a fundamentally different role and it will sustain it going forward. The only case I can see for that, and it actually potentially is a pretty compelling case, since Valentine's Day, so that's my arbitrary endpoint that I'm throwing out there, he's had 7 or more assists in every game but one. So he's having the ball in his hands a lot more in the last month or so. That would have been a much better endpoint, 1 month instead of saying Valentine's Day.
That's all right, buddy. Your brain was locked in on love, man. I get it. Like, it's just like, that's your favorite holiday.
I'm just a Valentine's Day guy. You know this. It is my favorite holiday.
You're a sweetheart.
I love you, Taylor. You're amazing. You're the woman of my dreams, if you're listening to this. Just kidding, but she is the woman. So anyways, Batum, I think you just basically, you have to buy into the assist narrative. And I think you can even buy into the assist narrative and still maybe he's not a $7,800 player. Like, we were making hard decisions at Batum at 6,000, right? So I think part of this is simply that the price is greatly inflated on two great games. And Atlanta, fine matchup, but probably not where I want to land for cash games.
Atlanta side, Schroeder played 33 minutes. They were able to get, he was able to play through crunch time mostly because he was helping contribute to the OKC Thunder comeback, because he's always getting completely blown off by or blown away by Westbrook. So he was able to make sure that they kind of kept their lottery odds in their favor as the OKC came back by 10 in the fourth quarter and won. Now, he played 33 minutes. Dorsey got the start, but only played 19 minutes. He was a guy that was a pretty popular play when he grabbed that starting shooting guard slot, and still played 19 minutes and was really, really bad.
Dorsey basically had one big minutes game, and probably a lot of people were dreaming that that was going to maintain itself. The Hawks just sort of don't know what the plan is right now. That's the only thing I can take away, because in the one close game they played in the last week, Schroeder played only 23 minutes, and then he played 33 minutes against OKC. So, this was a hard one for me to put together last night. I think I was a little bit too bullish on Schroeder's minutes at 32, but I can also see a case where those minutes have to go somewhere now, and we don't really have a strong projection for where they're going to go in the system right now. So I don't think I want to play any Hawks here, just because they're so erratic and just generally bad.
The only reason that Schroeder is like even a consideration at this point is mostly, and it's this is a player pool issue, is a point guard on FanDuel, like I said, is very bad. There are some teams, guys in really bad matchups. There's some blowout risks. There's some minutes issues, and really just down the list, we haven't even touched on a lot of them yet, but really down the list, you're looking at a question mark next to every guy except for maybe Lillard, and that question mark is the price. So you are, I think that's going to, this is going, the point guard situation is going to be one of the harder ones to kind of filter through on FanDuel, and we're, you know, like, you know, Rubio, but he's got a blowout and it's expensive. So we'll get to some of these other guys in a second. But Clippers go in and play Houston. This is the biggest over under on the night at 225, though it's coming outsized on the Houston side because they are minus 11 favorites. The Clippers have stuck with their starting lineup of Lou Will and Thornwell, and they are a real big risk of just not even seeing the fourth quarter in this game with Houston. Mm-hmm. Houston can blow them out with the best of them, and they walk into the game as big favorites. Are we treating this like a blowout situation? Because I wouldn't mind guys like Chris Paul or Harden or whatever, but I'm a little worried about the minutes kind of on both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I don't know. In a game like this where both teams have something to play for, yeah, I see the big, you know, that Houston's heavily favored. I think the high total gives me a little bit more encouragement about playing these guys, because there's just a lot of scenarios where, you know, Houston's up by 7. And so let me rephrase for a second. A high total in a game, or a high spread in a game with a high total, is less scary than a big spread in a game with a low total, because there are more points to go around. And as we go towards the fourth quarter, the game rates to be tighter on average than a game with a lower total. And just if you, that doesn't make sense, you just trust me, the math works out there. If the game has a 180 total, then you're going to look at a score going into the fourth quarter where things are a little bit stretched out, just because fewer points, I think, are going to often be scored in the fourth quarter. So I'm a little bit less concerned about a high total here than I would be otherwise. Also, just because there's potentially more fantasy production. So even if they do play 3.5 quarters or something, that could wind up being enough. That being said, you are looking at some pretty aggressive pricing here. Like, I don't know which the guys were that you were hoping to play from the Houston side, but guys like Harden, Paul, these guys are playing generally fewer minutes than you would hope for them to play and what their averages have been on the season. And the production really hasn't been there at current price points. So I don't know which guys you really like on the Houston side, but I am not particularly excited about playing them regardless.
I'm a little concerned, not concerned, but one interesting thing that happened last game for Houston was they actually changed their rotations a little bit. So in the past, they had played James Harden the entire fourth quarter, and they subbed out Paul, you know, five or so minutes in, and he came in and kind of ran the second unit. They didn't do that. This time they subbed Harden out at the 3 minute mark. They 9 minutes had gone by. So he played 9 minutes in the first quarter, and then with 3 minutes left to go in the first quarter, Paul came back in. That's much earlier than usual. So I don't know if this is showing that they are starting to manage, like they want to be more aggressive in how they manage the minutes, because that is exactly how you do it. Like, the reason that Harden would typically play a lot more minutes than Paul, one, is because maybe they were managing Paul, but two, the rotations. Like, Harden would always get his minutes in the first quarter, and then Paul would get his buzzed off in the end if the game was out of hand, if that makes sense. If this is the new case where they are going to sub him out earlier, I think you could just see downward guidance in all their minutes, or maybe Paul remains around the same and Harden is just going to possibly just be playing less. I hope I'm making sense in how I'm like assessing this, but I'd be a little concerned also that you're seeing peak prices on a team that looks like they might be, it's a little bit more in their heads that like, we want to have these guys completely fresh for the playoffs. And if we don't have home court advantage all throughout, that's just not going to be the end of the world. And it's not worth sacrificing the legs on the guys that we're going to need for the whole playoff run. So that would be my other thing too. Now the Clippers, you know, do you think it's worth just like kind of going high on like a guy like Lou Will, because like if we were going to stack a tournament, like, is he a guy that's going to keep him in the game? You know, DeAndre's coming off some huge games, or do you think these guys are just too expensive? Did they fit into the assessment of just too expensive, like you said with Houston, or did you kind of say that was the whole game was too expensive?
I don't know. I mean, Lou Williams is a guy I'm pretty intrigued by right now, because moves into the starting lineup and the price has come down dramatically. Like, he was 8,400 and people were playing him with some consistency. Now he's down to 7,300. Now, the thing is, it seems pretty obvious at this point that the natural rotation for him is going to be around 34 minutes out of the starting lineup. Don't ask me how the Clippers make this all work, by the way. They figured it out somehow, how to get a guy generally, you know, kind of like fewer minutes in the starting role than he was getting off the bench. But I think that price point, I'm listening, you know, going up against Houston, it's kind of tricky because depending on who you draw on the defensive end, that can really influence things. But I'm at least paying attention to Lou Williams at 7,300, especially for big tournaments, because obviously if he starts getting the hot hand, keeps the Clippers in the game, that just drives the total up. It drives up the overall number of possessions we see in this game. And I think we can get there. Outside of him, I think you're probably taking on a little bit too much risk. Guys like Harris, I think, simply too expensive for me, you know, and we're several games past his little hot streak against two terrible defenses in New Orleans and Brooklyn. Like, he really hasn't been doing this. Even in his hashtag revenge games against Orlando, like, didn't really do a whole lot. So I think out of him, I'm not particularly compelled. The only other guy that I could see coming into lineups potentially might be Sindarius Thornwell, just because he's so cheap at a really bad position and just came off playing 30 minutes. So, and also just buyer beware, because he played 30 minutes there and 14 against Orlando. So yeah, best of luck, I guess, in trying to figure out how a game with a high total with a wonky Clippers team is actually going to make it all happen.
My one little concern with Lou Williams is that I just by looking at this game log, and I'm going to go run a test on this as soon as we're done, or maybe I actually already did. He does see a usage downgrade when he shares more court time with that starting group, right? When he's on the court more with Rivers and Harris and not as much DeAndre, he does shoot less. And this was a guy that shot a ton off the bench. earlier in the season, because he would come in when everyone else would basically leave, and he was just he was relied on to do all the scoring. It's really not as much of the case when he's with the starting unit. It's not a huge difference, but it's there. It's like, I mean, we have it as like a 2% downgrade, which is not insignificant when it comes to like how we look at usage and stuff in our
system. Yeah, but see, hold on a second though, because I buy that for sure. And when you're playing 35, 36 minutes a game, like you're out there with the starters a ton anyway. I was talking about this to someone else in chat. I think going into the Orlando game when we were rostering Williams, and they were like, yeah, he'll shoot less coming out of the starting lineup. And okay, that's probably true on some level, but last five games, 15 shots, not great, 22, 17, 21, and 22 shots. Like the shots really haven't been the problem. If anything, it's more like the field goal percentage from three. He's not getting to the line as much. Like there's issues with Lou Williams, but I think he's still going to get his shots in the air.
I agree with you. I'm not saying he's, and I'm actually not even saying he's a bad play. I also agree with you that he has had other wonkiness in his box score. He got to the line a ton last game, but he needs to get to the line and hadn't done it at all. He's got like no steals in the last couple of games. And he is a guy that can, like, he's averaged about a steal a game this season. To have none over the last three games, it doesn't seem like a lot, but it's kind of a lot, right? Like that's half a points per dollar, like kind of, I think, half a points per dollar kind of piece away for him. So there are other little issues, like the assist numbers were completely gone for one game. So there are other little issues. And I think those round up, and I think we still can't give him all of his just like bench scoring minutes also. So I think it's a combination of factors, and I'm still totally, totally, totally fine playing him just because I do think he's something of a value. 8 o'clock game in the old don't plan on watching this game at all. Chicago goes in and plays the Grizzlies. Chicago did move Noah Vonleh into the starting lineup last game with Lauri Markkanen out. It looks like he's going to stick in the starting lineup. He was bad to start and then kind of came on as the game went on. Still only played 27 or 28 minutes in the game. Coming very cheap against the Memphis team. I'm only starting with him because he seems like one of the very few guys worth considering in this one. But maybe you see things a little differently. Maybe you looked at it a little more closely than me. Vonleh is really the only guy that stands out, but I'm not sure if you see this game differently.
No, not really. I think Vonleh, he's a tricky one to assess too, because we've seen him, like in the past, especially in past stops in Portland, be one of those guys who can just sit out there and do not a whole lot. That's changed a little bit since he's come to Chicago. He actually has been a lot stronger on a fantasy points per minute basis. Last two games, you know, 8-7 in 27 minutes against LA, 8-8 against Atlanta in just 18 minutes. That's kind of filling it up on a $3,600 price tag. So I think, especially given, like, as you start to look at lineups tonight, there are some big money plays that you're probably going to want to have out there. And it's kind of there's a startling lack of mid-range value tonight almost, which is very strange because normally it kind of goes in the opposite direction. But yeah, I think Vonleh, totally playable. If for no other reason, because if he gets given the starting job again, he'll probably just be chalk, and then you can, you know, be in there with him at a 75% ownership rate and kind of compete on the other slots, which I think at a somewhat weak position is pretty attractive to me tonight.
Other Bulls, or I mean on the Memphis side, Kobe Simmons was decent last game. I don't know if you trust anything with this situation with the Grizzlies. Looks like they're going to be without Tyreke Evans again. Mario Chalmers doubtful again, so it's been a while, and Andrew Harrison out. So like it's been a while now with their backcourt. Ben McLemore randomly just didn't start last game, moved back to the bench. Jarrell Martin got the start. I don't know if that sticks. It's very hard to trust these kind of situations now, especially if we don't know. Like now we're in a, because they did that at the last second. We clearly can't trust McLemore. I also don't think we can trust Jarrell Martin because you don't know, he could just not start again. Does that make sense? They're not locked into a starting lineup at this point, I don't think. And so I feel like the whole thing is untrustworthy. Do you get the same sense when you look at the Grizzlies that, you know, just because some of these random pieces started last game does not mean they're going to start the next game?
Yeah, I don't know how you confidently play any Grizzlies or even project the Grizzlies' minutes. The last three games have been decided by 18, 34, and 17 points, and there's been a lot of rotation in the starting lineup since then. I did my best kind of based on what happened last game because, you know, it was like mostly because as you eyeball test it and you look at the starters minutes, like I try to, with crazy teams like this, I try to ground them around guys who normally do play consistent minutes. And so I see a guy like Marc Gasol and I think, okay, well, the Grizzlies probably at least have a plan with Marc Gasol. And then I kind of basically imply how many minutes the other guys around him were supposed to play, because if Gasol played 2.5 minutes less than usual, I assume that maybe Martin Green, Brooks, and Simmons probably had the same treatment. That being said, you're probably not going to want to run Kobe Simmons out there. Not only could he just randomly lose a starting job back to Ben McLemore in a heartbeat, he could just play 18 minutes, 15 minutes. It's all in play. So I don't know that on a big slate like this where that Memphis is really where you're going to want to land. I'd say the only thing they really have going for them here is that they just happen to be playing one of the other extremely terrible teams, and that makes it less likely than usual that they're going to get blown out. But sometimes that doesn't stop them, you know. Like this is one of those truly, truly horrendous teams. Like they lost by 34 to Dallas just 2 games ago. What can you say about these guys?
Well, this is funny because this is a leverage game for both these teams, but not in the way that you would usually want a leverage game to be, because Chicago, they kind of need to keep losing. And right now, Memphis is tied for first best odds for the first overall pick in the draft. So if you're into watching two teams try really damn hard to lose on purpose, this is going to be one of them. Now, going the opposite way, a game that is very high leverage in terms of playoff seedings and considerations is New Orleans goes in and plays the Spurs. Right now, the West playoff race is so tight that while the Pelicans are fifth in the West and the Spurs are technically out of the playoffs if the playoffs were to start today, they're only separated by 2 games in the loss column. So this game really means a lot for both teams, and probably makes for one of the more just interesting narratives on the night, because the Spurs go into this game, they're still obviously without Kawhi. They're really, really struggling in the short term. Their rotations are kind of all over the place. It looks like they don't really have... I mean, it's Pop, so you have to kind of trust them. And they did win last game, but they're 3-7 in their last 10 as they sort of struggle with what they want to do, even in their starting lineup or not. You know, when you looked at this team, what was your general sense of, like, the plan? Because it's a good matchup. This game has a lot of points that are supposed to go up on the board. New Orleans is not a good defense. It feels like we should have some Spurs here. And I don't know, after looking at it, how much you trust, you know, who's going to get the opportunity for this team.
Yeah, well, let's go by position, and I think that will give you insight into how much clarity I had on this going forward. So you got center, Pau Gasol, last 3 games, 24, okay, kind of get 14 and 15 minutes. Nope, can't really trust any of that. You can go into power forward, and I think here's the one bright shining light from this game, given that the Spurs have to be competitive. I know that minutes haven't totally been there for Aldridge. I have to think, in a normal game script, that he'll be out there. So I know that it hasn't come through recently, but Aldridge is a guy who I am prepared to trust just because he's kind of young compared to some of his teammates, and he's just their best player right now, and I think that's going to have to be there. Outside of him, small forward, you're just guessing, you know, between Anderson and Gay. We just have no reliable data on where they're going to trend in that direction. Shooting guards, the same story. It could be Danny Green one night, Ginobili, Bryn Forbes. Like, they just spread the minutes around. And point guard, you're looking at a combination of a lack of clarity and guys probably being overpriced relative to their production. So I'm not going to play Murray at 66 on FanDuel. There's an argument for Mills at 4,000, but he can also just play 8 minutes in a game. So I don't think, unfortunately, you heard as much as I did going through these positions, and even Aldridge, potentially a little speculative based on recent minutes, but it's just a full-on mess, and it kind of seems like they're just losing their minds here.
Yeah, I'm willing to go be aggressive on Aldridge. I think if I was going to use any recent game as the comp, and I know you can't do this with the Spurs because they play rotations, they play matchups just as good as anybody in the league, so I'm not going to go completely crazy. But for Aldridge, I do think the 37 minutes that he played in a close game against Golden State is what they probably want to have him out there if the game stays close. So I have no problem being aggressive on his minutes, and the rest of them, I don't want to pick and choose. Is this going to be the 34-minute Kyle Anderson night for sure? Because you can get burned by that. Possibly Deontay Murray, only because his floor strikes me as higher than some of the other guys, because one, he has the ball in his hands, and two, he can score fantasy points in a number of different ways. So I think if I was to rank, like, the starters in terms of how much I trusted them, Aldridge would be the clear top number one, and I would have no problem playing him in cash games. And then I would probably go Murray second, and then there would be a pretty large gap into like the rest of the guys, short of, you know, we get some kind of starting lineup change. And just as a fair warning on that, even that doesn't totally matter with the Spurs all the time. So just because, you know, Rudy Gay moves into the starting lineup does not mean this is going to be his 30-minute night. That they've shown that's not going to be the case. New Orleans, bad matchup here against San Antonio, who even on their weakest of nights still play very, very good defense. Do we want to pay top dollar for any of these Pelican guys in this kind of matchup? Or does this strike you as a place to maybe kind of, I was going to say fade, but that implies other people are going to play, just to avoid them?
Yeah, I don't know. People are going to go back to Anthony Davis, 70 fantasy points again against Charlotte, just trying to make me look stupid on a night-in, night-out basis. And I guess at this point, maybe I'm supposed to not be able to blame them anymore. I think the one real argument against, because San Antonio is one of these teams that are playing totally different players than they have at different points in the season. Maybe you can't trust the defensive efficiency numbers. One thing I think you can pretty much trust is that they're going to run Pop's offense, and that's going to mean a slow pace of play. At this point, they're the second slowest team in the league, and I think guys that are already fairly aggressively priced, and I'm talking about the relevant players on New Orleans, like Davis Holiday and Rondo, I think that's probably going to preclude me from playing them in my cash games in particular. Holiday and Davis seem to be the only ones with truly secure roles here, and Rondo has upside on a $6,300 price tag if he goes out there and plays 36 minutes, but can also just play 20 minutes like he did against Utah and Washington. So unfortunately, I don't think you can really tap into the New Orleans side here either.
Yeah, and they're daring you with Davis. Like, they dropped his price at 12.5 on FanDuel, 11.5 on DraftKings. The algorithm, you get downgrades when you play the Spurs, and so you're going to be in a close. It's going to be in a close situation. And it wouldn't totally shock me for him to play 40 plus minutes in a game that they really, 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 I wouldn't say have to win, but I'm sure they're looking at it like this gives them breathing room, at least over one of these other teams, in terms of just tiebreakers. To win this game is going to mean a lot. So if you're expecting outsized minutes especially from a guy like Davis, like I said with Aldridge too, he would be a guy that would be fine being pretty aggressive with it, and I'd understand that I was not getting a fantastic matchup. A great matchup for Utah, 12.5-point favorites against the Suns. Obviously, we've talked ad nauseum about what it's like to play the Suns and why that's such a great bonus for really any team that walks in or has them walk into their own gym. Utah is in that playoff picture as well. If the playoffs started now, they are tied with the Spurs, although it looks like they own the tiebreaker. But they have the exact same record as the Spurs. So they absolutely cannot lose this game. But 12.5-point favorites, you're worried about maybe a lot of the starters not seeing the fourth quarter. How do we handle a Jazz team who's getting the best DFS matchup you can get, and also are coming at some maybe elevated prices because the sites know that as well?
Well, I think there's a couple things that I don't really love about the Jazz here. The big spread is obviously one of them. A lot of their good players are just very aggressively priced for their current production. I mean, Rubio, $7,400, that's a big price tag for a guy who's played in roughly the same role all season and has scored 28 fantasy points per game. Favors the same story at $5,500. Rudy Gobert, not $9,500. Like, you're talking paying extreme premiums on these guys' historical prices. The two guys that I would call out as potential values tonight, I think Joe Ingles out of the small forward position, his year-to-dates don't totally reflect, I think, his current role. The assist numbers have been up recently, and so is the production. I mean, he's paid 5x on this price, or right around thereabouts in each of the last five games. The minutes seem to be on the uptrend. He's 6,600, which is still a lot for him, but in a very fast-paced matchup, I could see him getting there. And Donovan Mitchell, sort of the same story. Very high price for him based on his historical production, but again, in close games, the Jazz seem to like him for 36 up to 40 minutes. They will do whatever they can to win this game, but it should be a pretty easy game for them. And for me, that sounds like, hopefully, these guys can be GPP only plays.
Yeah, it's going to be tough because, again, it's very rare the night that Phoenix plays that I'm not seeing, one of their opponent come into some of these top lineups. And at least right now, that's not the case because you're getting them at the price points are just so high and you get the extra tick up because you play the Suns, right? So the site's algorithms work the opposite way of like what we mentioned with the Spurs, where they are going to jack some of the guys up. And when you get them, I mean, they're at the end of a long winning streak. Guys like Rubio shot like had a 22 shot game the other night. That was 2 games ago. He was bad against Pistons. Now, he's not going to shoot 22 times a game. He's going to shoot 12 times a game, basically, if you're really, really lucky. So you're buying on the back of some of these kind of maybe outlier performances, and I don't think I totally want to go there. Phoenix, big underdogs. They had been committed to playing their starters big minutes in terms of Booker, Warren, Josh Jackson to some degree. I guess he's not a starter. And then Elfrid Payton. Are we still trusting the minutes here on Phoenix, even in the games where they're big underdogs and could be losing? Or maybe has that worn off a little bit as the season has sort of progressed? And they've had some injury issues as well.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, both Booker and Warren, to me, I think if you had a clear picture as to how many minutes they were going to play, you could consider them. But I think actually we get a little bit of a reprieve here with this being such a tough matchup for them. Utah both playing slowly, fourth slowest pace in the league, and one of the best defensive efficiencies in the league. They're tied with the Spurs right now, better than Toronto. You know, like, this is a really, really strong defensive team. Also, that's one that's firing on all cylinders. So, yeah, I'm not going to take Phoenix and their erratic minute situation against the league's second-best defense. That's just not happening.
Detroit goes in and plays Denver. It's always a tough place to go in and play Denver on the road because the altitude. Denver does have something of a home court advantage, though they are coming off a loss. They are in a game here where Denver has to win. They've had some brutal losses this season, as evidenced even by the last one, their last game that they lost in a game that they pretty much just kind of had to win and had really no excuse losing against the Lakers and still lost by 9. But Lakers just have done a good job of trying to play spoiler as much as possible. Detroit basically out of the playoff picture at this point, really almost no chance they're going to make up the 5 games that they need to make up in the loss column to be able to get to catch the Heat. So I think their season's pretty much over. On paper, though, this is a kind of a fine matchup for the Pistons. And then you have the Denver team that you would think is just going to be firing at all cylinders in terms of their starters' minutes because they have to win, although that hasn't always played out. What are your general thoughts on Detroit and Denver?
Well, I think a fundamental question tonight is going to be, do we play Andre Drummond or Joel Embiid? I think both of them are in different situations, but kind of similar overall, both in terms of, you know, the minutes kind of coming and going from time to time, having excellent matchups on paper and being almost exactly the same price. So I guess I'm going to try and kick it back to you. I kind of like Drummond against Jokic and the Nuggets here, kind of regardless of the altitude. You know, this is a situation where I will trust the DVP a little bit and just kind of the historical momentum around Jokic and say, like, I think that he's a guy that opposing centers can take advantage of when things break right. I think Drummond's a little bit more athletic there. I think he's playable. What do you think?
Yeah, I do. I think he's cash game viable. I actually think we're buying low on him because the recent performance has been just not that great, and that there's some weirdness around that. They got blown out by Utah. They basically blew out Chicago, and I think we can explain away the loss of minutes there. I don't think they have any intention of, like, just playing the rest of the season out in, like, a tanking form because they can't. Right. And I guess they're not mathematically eliminated, so there's no point yet in just really just throwing in the towel. I think 36 or 37 minutes out of Drummond is completely reasonable, and I would much rather play Drummond than Embiid. I think that there's the only upside on Embiid is that if he actually gets all the way to 33 minutes. I think there are scenarios where Drummond plays 37, 30. I'm not going to project them in here, but I think 37 or 38 minutes is a place that Drummond can get to in a close game as they try to, I don't know if they're seeing this or thing is playing spoiler.
Yeah, we've
or
seen
what
it recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think Drummond's a cash game play. I think on FanDuel, this is a place to spend up. I think that he will have lower ownership because I think people are going to not want to do it just based on maybe some of the other plays. And I think I would be fine if I played him in cash and I opened it up. And I mean, we're not going to know this, but and he was like a 10% start, I'd feel pretty pumped, I think. I know that's a weird place to be and it's a weird feeling pumped to have. Yeah, I think because I think this is a spot where 50 fantasy points could just be the norm, and if the minutes can just be there based on the matchup and just kind of based on where his price has fallen. So yeah, I'm not all in on Drummond, but I would not be averse to just seeing him kind of in the lineup.
Just a little bit of it in on Drummond, like just kind of feeling your way in there.
Mm-hmm. What about Denver side? They've been playing some of these guys. Wilson Chandler's put a ton of minutes, was very good last game. You know, Jokic is always a guy that can triple double in the right kind of situation. Anything you like on the Nuggets side?
Yeah, I'll get to the Nuggets in one quick second. I will say that on the Pistons side, too, keep an eye on the small forward situation. Bullock missed the last game. Johnson got the start. Wasn't very good. I think people just forever want to project Johnson to be good when he's going to play 30 minutes, but we've seen these guys in Detroit in general. I don't know if this is like an institutional thing, but they're happy just to bury guys on their offense, and it looks like Johnson kind of has that treatment right now. So not going to jump in there. But I do think Blake, by the way, 8,000, totally playable at the power forward slot. If you think that 34 to 37 minute rotation is legit, 8,000 doesn't seem to be too bad at all for me on Blake. So I actually do like Blake quite a bit. Denver, it's kind of a weird situation for them because on one hand, you got guys like, you know, Murray, Chandler playing more minutes recently and looking like excellent plays on their price point. And then you also have the bad matchup here. So I don't know which we weigh more in a situation like this. Like, do we care more that Detroit both plays a bottom 10 pace and a top 10 defensive efficiency? Or do we care more that the minutes are on the uptrend and the performance has been there. Like, I don't, that's one of the things that on the eyeball test is difficult for me to evaluate, you know, kind of credibly, and one where I kind of trust the system, but I don't know if you have any different thoughts.
Nah, that's kind of where I stand. I'm thankful that the matchup isn't a, like even like a neutral one, because Detroit does play slow. Like, I'm kind of glad that they are a little bit expensive, and I just don't need to worry about this being like a really, really fast paced game or anything. So I think I'm fine. I'd be fine really not rolling any Denver guys, unless something else cropped up over the course of the day. And final game, and this one's going to have a lot of question marks here, is Cleveland and Portland. So this is the final game of the night. It's an hour. It's the only 10 o'clock game, 3 hours after lineup lock. And we have injury news that's going to affect things, and I'm just not sure we're going to know how to play it. So the injury pieces that we have now, Nance, of course, left the game early after I rostered him 100% against the Suns. So that one was the old, you can just set your timer to that one. Plays 14 minutes in a game where every single other Cav, including the bench guys, hit value, except for him, because he just didn't play because of a hamstring issue. He's questionable with a hamstring issue. Rodney Hood is now listed as questionable with the back. These are two pieces that really matter in terms of all the rest of the Cavaliers' minutes. So Jeff Green had gotten the start, was pretty decent last game after getting the start the game before and not doing anything. Kyle Korver grabbed the start, played 23 minutes last game, was very good. Not totally clear if that would be something that they wanted to do again. What are we going to do with the Cavs? Maybe, or is it just we say it's like LeBron or bust here, and then the rest of them we just can't go out on a limb for because we're not going to know the injury news? And then, so that's my first question. And my second question is, what do you see as LeBron's possible ownership tonight? Do you think he's like just a clear big money payoff? Our system's not totally seeing it, at least right now. But I'm wondering if you think that ends up maybe rounding out over the course of the day.
Yeah, I would guess Harden is the highest owned big money player on this slate. Just because the other options, LeBron against Portland, it's like only fine on this price point. Davis against San Antonio, I don't think people are going to go there. Like on average, just because, again, the matchup, I think, spooks people off. And then you're down in like the Embiid, Drummond, Lillard sort of territory, guys where you wonder if they should even be in the same discussion. So I would guess Harden's the highest owned. Maybe LeBron sees some, but yeah, 12.5 is still like, it's not a price that he pays reliably and not a place I don't think I would want to land here.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. This one's going to be a close one for me when it's all said and done. I think LeBron, my guess is LeBron is the highest owned of that group, and I would get why, and I'm just not sure that's where I ultimately land. Going the other way, Lillard has been pretty good lately. This is a good spot. They still really can't. George Hill is an improvement over what they were getting before, and he's still just not like a complete lockdown defender. Do you think we see higher ownership on a guy like Lillard? But he's getting expensive too at 9,600.
Yeah, I think Lillard's another guy who falls into this category of guys where like a nice run recently probably makes people more bullish in general than they ought to be on him. The minutes have been there for Lillard all season, and he's only scored 43 fantasy points per game. Nothing has changed about this team. So why now? Why has he become a $9,700 player? It's not like he's made big strides in his game or anything like that. It's not like the team uses him any differently. I suspect that it's more just like a clustering effect around shooting percentage. The last four games, shooting, he had 32 points, 28 points, 37 points, 39 points. He's not a true talent, 35-point a game guy. He's like the 27 points a game that he's had on the season already sort of on the high end for him. And I don't think that there's room for additional growth there. So
well, I think Lillard, what it is 100%, he's shooting 50% from three over the last four games.
That's what I'm saying. Like, and you just can't count on that. Nobody shoots that on that kind of volume, or at least Lillard doesn't, right? So yeah, I don't really trust Lillard on this price point. The good matchup with Cleveland at least gives me pause. Like, I could consider him, particularly on FanDuel, where if I'm going to look at Walker at 8,300, or maybe I can go up and get Lillard, and there's other punt plays that could become available. Maybe I'm talking now, but yeah, overall, I'm not feeling good about it.
All right, interesting basketball slate here for Thursday, much bigger than we kind of expected. Go and check out dfsr.com/NBA to get a free 3-day trial to our projection system, powered by Lineup Lab, optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. dfsr.com/NBA will get you that. Buddy, make sure everyone, this is actually a PSA, everyone watch NBA, not NCAA tonight. You'll be better off for it. Buddy, we'll talk to you again tomorrow when we break down Friday.
Another PSA, don't drink and drive.